Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Kristen and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 176 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell, and alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, everybody? What's up, Tristan Cannell? How's everybody doing today? Who we got?
Man, we've got Andrew Ma. It's going to be a very interesting chat. You know, we've had Tim Kennedy on before, and these Special Forces guys really intrigue me, and Andrew's got a very special story.
Once again, another one of these guys who was a high-level athlete when his playing career came to an end, transitioned that skill set, and he's educated into a leadership role with the U.S. military, and two kind of similar paths with the pro athlete military with, like you said, with Tim and with Andrew. But as you guys are going to hear, two totally different approaches, two totally different characters. And Andrew is a guy that we're excited to bring on from his stories and the value he's going to bring to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very unique sort of story. Well, kind of unique to him, but it's happening a lot.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, what he's seen in American society with the military and things like that. So what he's doing is, you know, the fact that it's from a personal experience, and now that he's helping, he's using that personal experience to help others make sure that they don't suffer the same consequences that he did.
Yeah, and it's really a story of education. It's a story of recovery. It's a story of empathy, and his work with, you know, brain function and PTSD and, yep, you know, studies into...
And it's so new that...
Yeah.
That's why we've got to get people like Andrew on, and more people have to get in. People, anyone that's got a podcast out there, you
for
should
sure
have people like Andrew on to help support this cause and spread the message.
Like with Tim, when we had him on, right off jump, in his inflection, in his delivery, you know that he's been in the shit. You know that he's seen the darkness. He'll tell you about it, and he did. With Andrew, this interview, you got to keep reminding yourself that this is a guy that has been in the shit and he's seen it. But because of his, his message is really from empathy and love and wanting... Also, like, transitioning people from that state back into normal society. And I like the research side of things as well. It's kind of like that's his calling. He, you know, when it comes to livelihood, mental state, man, it's an issue with all of us.
Yeah.
And having a guy like Andrew, you know, and you know, we've talked to multiple athletes in multiple industries, and not even just athletes, guys. You know, you can get brain trauma from, you know, psychological abuse. You could get brain trauma from depression. It's really all about, I think, highlighting the fact that it's normal. It shouldn't be taboo. And hopefully one day we could get to a stage where men and women alike could confess and admit and ask for help. Hey, I'm struggling with this sort of thing. And from Andrew's perspective, it is from a combat side of things.
Yeah, and it's getting a lot better. It's a lot better.
But I think it's all interconnected.
10 years ago. So
I think it's all interconnected.
Hopefully on the right track forward, and we'll see more stories and more people reaching out for help.
More research and all that good stuff.
All right, before we get Andrew on the show, just a big shout out to everyone subscribing and, you know, leaving us 5-star reviews on iTunes. It's a great way for us to grow the show and be seen by more people. So I just want to say thank you to doing that. If you haven't yet, and you do have some time, please jump on. It's a pretty simple thing, either on your iTunes, on your desktop, or on your phone. Just search the Vision Board Podcast. It'll come up with the review section, and you can leave a simple review.
Yeah, guys, it takes 2 seconds. We really appreciate it. Believe it or not, Tristan and I actually go through those things every now and then and read them, and it makes everything worthwhile. You know, we like what we do, and it's really awesome when you guys support us, so thank you.
Most definitely. All right, guys, I introduce Andrew Ma. All right, guys, our special guest is Andrew Ma. Andrew is a Special Forces Green Beret. He's the co-founder and CEO of Warrior Angel Foundation, and he's also the author of the incredible book, Tales from the Blast Factory, A Brain-Injured Special Forces Green Beret's Journey Back from the Brink. We welcome Andrew Ma. Andrew, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks, Tristan, for telling the reciting the longest subtitle in the history of subtitles.
Yeah, Andrew, thanks a lot for stopping by. I think it's really important to start with, Warrior Angels. So let's open that up. And for our fans who are just getting to know who you are and your intentions with that is, could you share insights on Warrior Angels?
Yeah. Again, Tristan, Johnny, it's an honor for me to be on here and to deliver, disseminate this information to all the listeners out there. We're Angels Foundation, grew out of my own personal trials and tribulations, kind of walking or dealing with the medical industrial model, the Western medicine or the military medical model, specifically for traumatic brain injury. And so what it aims to do, and now what we're doing through business as well as it's a nonprofit here in the States, is to at least improve the way that we diagnose, treat, and mitigate traumatic brain injuries. And we found some kind of revolutionary doctor, pioneers of neuroendocrinology, that's the medical director, and he's developed these protocols that allows us to objectively look at some blood markers through a lab test and find out two things. Is there inflammation in the brain, and does that affect the hormonal production of the brain in the body? And what, you know, we'll get into it, but once that happens, that is the physical manifestations, the psychological and cognitive and behavioral manifestations that we see of disease. And when that process is interrupted in the body, we have what's now something that's out of balance. And so we've been able to help that. We've helped about 200 veterans and service members, U.S. Veterans and service members, over the last 3 years. But what we're really proud about is we've been able to just release a 3-year study. And the results that we're able to produce on a regular basis has never been seen before in the medical literature. And so that's what we're about. We're about solutions, solving problems with alternative, outside-the-box solutions backed up with evidence and science.
It was like we came on the show, I was mentioning how quickly I read your book, and it just seems that even in the 130 pages, I got to know you so well, and some of the tribulations that you actually experienced coming back from Afghanistan, and like I read that, you know, you pretty much your whole life changed at your son's hospital bed. And at the same time, you met one of your sons picking up your bag for the first time. Like, going to that, like, it was just such an interesting... I've never heard a story like this before, man. So tell us a little bit about that part.
Sure. And that's not special or specific to me. That's kind of the life of a soldier in this post-September 9/11 area or arena. And the same thing for the Australian soldiers as well, and I've had the privilege to work with some of the SAS, and just phenomenal dudes, incredible at what they do. So not anything I give here is specific or special to me. It's kind of the story. But I was on my last deployment, guys, in 2013. I was scheduled to come home for the birth of our child. And this was, let me think about this. This is our fourth child and our first boy. And about 2 weeks before I'm set to go home, we're on a mission, and it went south. And we're leaving an objective where we've been in a firefight for the majority of the day. We had a couple of guys in a kill zone, which means they were pinned down by effective enemy sniper fire, and that's a whole other show in and of itself. But we got them out, eliminated the enemy in the area, and we're heading back to base when we hit the vehicle behind me hit what's called an improvised explosive device. Now, we're a 42,000-pound vehicle here, and I'm watching as that vehicle hit that IED, improvised explosive device, and shot that 42,000-pound vehicle about 20 feet in the air. And then it blew the doors out and came down, and actually came down on one of our guys.
Wow.
He's unconscious and trapped under it when we got to him. But it was shortly after, like, we're setting up the perimeter because that initiated another ambush by the enemy. So we're taking rocket-propelled grenades, heavy machine gun fire, and everything else you can think of to initiate that attack. So we're fending off that attack, trying to care for the wounded, and just going about business as usual. But somewhere in the lull in that fire, I realized, like, because we are now down three of Special Forces guys on my team, that were no longer able to operate anymore as a result of their injuries from that blast. And so the team just got decimated by like 25%. And I realized, like, hey, I can't go home now for the birth of a child. Like, my wife, my children are safe. They have access to medical care, electricity, air conditioning, you know, refrigeration, flush toilets, water. Out here, we don't have any of that, and people are pursuing and trying to kill us. So, you know, I made the decision like, hey, I'm not going home. I'm going to stay here, and we're going to fight this out, and I'm going to do everything in my power to bring the rest of these men back to their loved ones. And, you know, and later on, 72 hours later, when we got to call home and kind of give them an update on what was going on, you know, I had to bring the news to my wife and say, baby, here's what happened. Here's what happened to our brothers that we love. And because of this, I'm making the decision. I'm staying out here, and I'm not coming back. And you're going to have to, you know, deliver have the baby without me there. And she's so gangster, man. She was like, hey, you do whatever you got to do. We're going to be here when you get back, but you bring the rest of those men back alive. And I said, yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. We went on about business. And when the trip was up, I was able to shoot out a little bit early. And I met my son for the first time at the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, flying back directly from Afghanistan. So that was kind of the setting and circumstance of meeting him for the first time. Pretty unique.
Yeah, Andrew, my brother-in-law, Ed, has been in the Air Force for going on over 20 years. My nephew's in the Air Force. I know. I just want to say happy Veterans Day, you know, in Australia. Yeah. That was a couple weeks ago. Mm. Seeing Ed, my brother-in-law, you know, he's been active duty for over two decades, and I always go back to America for 2 weeks, and then he makes time to pop in, and I get to hang out with him, and then he has to leave for extended periods of time for my sister and his family. And he talks quite a bit about the mindset that the way he, as an 18-year-old, he went in, and now I think he's 40 or 41, it's a team. And he talks about his guys, and he talks about, you know, because a guy like myself who've never been in the military, never seen what, you know, a soldier would see, it's kind of, I think, impossible for me to even try to compare what that sort of, you know, would look like. And he always talks about leaving his family is like, or leaving his guys is like leaving his family. And so I want to maybe share some insights on the mental side of things of when guys come back. Sebastian Younger has that, you know, if anyone's familiar with his work with, you know, the separation from the team, creating a lot of these, you know, mental, I don't know, kind of separations from reality when you guys come back. Is this something that's widely, you know, talked about in your group, you know, when you're overseas, when you're with your guys?
It's not something that's necessarily talked about, but, you know, it's understood. And when you live in this arena, and it's not for the stakes are real. It's not for a championship. You know, it's not for a bonus check. It's life and death. And when you're in that arena, everything is magnified to the nth degree. And, you know, as a byproduct of that, you spend, as at least when I was on the team, in my experience, more time with the individuals on your team than you probably do with your own blood family or your family. And, you know, you're breaking bread together. You're living in close proximity together. You're in extreme and austere environments together. And so I think what people have a difficulty with is some of life can be trivial when it's life is not at stake all the time. Mm. And I think that's what people have a difficulty kind of getting reintroduced into life, is that struggle with some of these trivial things. And they don't know how to react to that. And then you get away from that team environment and you're in a different culture, or you're back in the world again, back in society again. That again can be difficult on the individual. But, you know, I'm not one to say it's everybody else should like cater to somebody who's been in combat. The individual's going to have to realize, like, you know what, the environment's changed. Mm. I have to change. It's not the world that needs to cater to me. I need to figure out, you know, what is the appropriate reaction to this environment, and how can I do my best, and how can I give? How can I give more? Not what can I take, or what does somebody owe me? I think when you get in that mentality in any arena, you're heading for a slippery slope.
Mm. Andrew, the psychology of warfare and combat, What do you think about when someone is shooting at you and trying to hurt you?
Not a lot of thinking going in at that stage, but you know, I'll kind of set the stage like this. As a member of I had the privilege of being a member of a special operations team for almost a decade, and every time we went out to do a mission, it was going to result in this: orphans and widows.
Yeah.
Every time. Period. Period. And it was either going to be on one side or the other. And I understood that going into it. And so that brought a level of commitment that has been unprecedented in my experience, at least. Yeah. Knowing that we're going, when we cross this threshold, this invisible line in the sand of going from the known into the unknown, lives will be taken. And so that allows you to, I mean, before that ever happens, you make the decision that I will sacrifice in everything as much as I humanly possibly can to perform to the best of my abilities when the situation calls for it. And because everybody has already made that commitment, you're able then to revert to your foundational level of training, because that will be what happens in life, whether it's combat, whether it's your mom getting hit by being in a car accident and you get the call, whatever it is, you're going to revert back to your foundational level of training. And that's the importance of making that foundational level of training good enough to handle most situations, because there is no time to pause and reflect in these situations. You just have to act. And not acting in itself is a decision, and usually a disastrous one. But that's how guys are able, or individuals are able to maintain or even thrive in these scenarios, because they have it at a foundational level. They've trained it into their muscle memory to just be able to go out there and perform. And that's the way you do it, because otherwise I think it would be too much psychological stimulus to try to deal with in the situation itself. I'm not saying you can't rise to the occasion when you meet something that you're unprepared for, but if you want to be as prepared as possible, that's the psychology behind it.
Well, Andrew, when I was 17, we started, me and my three best friends started getting recruited by the Marine Corps straight out of high school. And two of my best friends are Marines and they're JAGs now. I didn't go. I have a nephew who, since he could remember, he wanted to join the military because of his pops. You have the kid who all they want to do is be a soldier, join the military. You have the guy, like a buddy of mine, who got recruited, and it was kind of a way for him to go to university, and he used it that way. When you were a younger guy, what was your mindset in your late teens? Were you on the front line wanting to go, or what was your transition into the military from being a teenager?
I grew up, my first love was football all the way through university. So I was fortunate enough to be a college athlete, to play football through college. And so that's all I ever really wanted to do. Or I guess you could say that was always kind of objective number one. And maybe number two would have been military, but I've always been the type of guy that's all in. So I just put everything in on football. And then, you know, when that kind of came to a close, it was a natural progression. Like, I was pursuing what I thought was, you know, I was supposed to be pursuing in my life at that time. And when the NFL didn't come calling, it was like, okay, well, what are we going to do next? How can I best transfer my talents and skill sets into another arena? And I guess being a part of a team, you know, for the majority of my life, that felt very much at home to me. And so I started to look at the different special operations arenas, and the Green Berets really, really, you know, struck a chord with me. It made the most sense to me, or it seems like it might be the best place that I can offer my services. And so I graduated college, and in August of 2006, and I was in the Army in October of 2006, so just a few months later. And so that was kind of the progression going from one lane in life to another.
Andrew, considering that you played football all the way through your childhood into your teens as well, were you a bit of a ticking time bomb in terms of, you know, you're an explosive expert in the Army? Did you think that football also contributed to the head injuries that you also received?
I do. We didn't know anything about head injuries. I mean, you know, it's just now coming out, a lot of the scientific literature and I guess, and maybe in the public persona, so to speak, you know, just, there just wasn't a lot about it. Like, so much so, like, when I was playing, like, I grew up in Texas, in the United States, and, you know, football is kind of a way of life. And dudes would get knocked out, like knocked out cold.
Yeah.
They take him to the sidelines, like give him some smelling salts.
Yep.
Come back too, and then they go back in the game. You know what I mean? Like, and nobody ever thought anything about it. I didn't think anything about it either. And as counterintuitive as that sounds, like, we didn't know any better. Yeah. You know?
We were taught to hit with our head. Like, I started playing football at 7 and played up until I was 19. And, you know, I grew up in Ohio. And I tell these guys, as a 7-year-old in tackling drills, we would have that bull in the ring drill, and you're taught to lead with your head.
Yep.
And our brains are just mush at the time. And I think about it a lot because I did open that latest brain CTE study that came out a couple months ago from Harvard, and it was highlighting the facts that people riding horses are susceptible. Just the sheer force from being on a horse could give that. And then you start thinking, when we're younger kids like that, American football, boxing, it's kind of like, you know, hopefully I'm 35. The older I get, the technology could kind of speed up in a sense of, like, if there is damage, that it's just not like a write-off. That there, maybe there's things to regenerate the brain.
Oh, we can get into that, absolutely. The NFL just came out with a study, I think, around 2010, and it said that if the – this was based off NFL retired players – that if a retired player had suffered at least one concussion while playing – they were 19 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's between the ages of 30 and 49.
Wow. See, man, that really scares me.
That's actually...
You know what I mean? Like, like one concussion, major concussion, 19 times more likely, and not at 70, between the ages of 30 and 49. I don't remember the name of that study, but the listeners can Google that to find it. But, man, what our work is shown, what the book is about, is solution. See, I just had a number of traumatic brain injuries. And, yes, football, I absolutely played into that. It's like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's different for everybody, but it definitely contributed to mine. But what we know, man, is that, okay, everything is a process of inflammation, and that's a fancy word for swelling, or basically chemistry being leaked out of areas in the brain that's not supposed to be exposed. So it's that chemistry, that inflammatory chemistry, that's very necessary in the short term. When it goes into chronic, long term, that's when it becomes extremely damaging. And so every neurodegenerative disease, based off of all the scientific research and evidence, is a result of this inflammation. And then that will then shut off your hormonal production. Hormones in the brain, those are called neurosteroids. And that wasn't even known prior to 1986 from a doctor in France called Dr. Bailu. And so steroids in the brain, steroids in the body are called neuroactive steroids. That's the testes, the ovaries, the adrenals, the thyroids. And when these systems do not run efficiently, or inefficient or deficient, then that's going to cause a problem in our biology, in the systems of the body, and that's going to manifest as all types of different types of symptoms and diseases that we hear about. So the beautiful thing is what we've shown in my own story, and now through 1,600 documented cases, is that this, one, can you identify it? And the answer is yes. You can do it through a lab test. All right, that's going to show these lab markers that if there is neuroinflammation or a chronic inflammation in the body.
Are you talking the brain damage? So the CTE sort of stuff?
CTE is a continuum of traumatic brain injury. And what it does is it causes these tau proteins to become entangled in the cell. So it's a process from long-term chronic inflammation. CTE is just a label. It's a word that really means long-term inflammation inflammation has been exposed so long in the brain that it's caused the degradation of the brain, and these are the physical manifestations of it. You can only see...
Posthumously, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, right now we can only see CTE post-mortem, right? Post-mortem. But we can, through a lab analysis, say, oh my God, this chemistry has run amok and is causing all kinds of problems. This chemistry should not be at this level. We need to get it under control. It's a direct result. And again, this isn't my understanding. This isn't my work. This work is out there in the scientific literature.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier in the chat about the research, 3 years. You briefly touched base. Can we open that a little bit? The research, is it for the and you said there's blood markers with now when we talk about brain injury, are we talking about physical like impact brain injuries, because, or are we talking about like the mental side, or are we talking about both? And maybe share that.
Well,
study.
let's just break down what a brain injury is. Yeah. All right, that is basically, there's two phases to a brain injury. And the first one is the physical trauma. This could be an explosive blast wave, a baseball hitting your head, a slip and fall, acceleration, deceleration, like being on one of these incredible roller coaster rides that go from like 0 to a bazillion miles an hour in 1 second. Well, that whips the head back and forth. Well, by definition, that could cause a brain injury. Now, this is not scare tactics or anything else. We are trying to educate ourselves better about all the things that could produce this. So that's that first part of it. It's the physical trauma that causes the brain to whip back and forth in the skull. And the brain is floating in cerebral spinal fluid, and it's encased in that skull. So if you have something that makes it go back and forth really quick, then the brain is going to smack the front and the back, or side to side. And they found now in blasts that this can happen 1,000 times in a second. Each one of those, by definition, would be a concussion or a traumatic brain injury. So we're talking about things that we've never seen before in the history of civilization or mankind. But that's phase one, physical trauma. Phase two is the difficult part. It's what they call the silent wound of the war, or the stealth wound, and that's the slow, insidious leakage of the chemicals known as inflammation, or in the brain, neuroinflammation. And so very slowly over time, these micro tears that occur as a result of the physical trauma, micro tears in the neurons and the blood vessels, these areas in the brain, again, leak out things that were not intended to be leaked out, and not long term. So when that happens over time, a long time, that is going to lead to cellular damage in the brain. Cellular damage in the brain. Or it will kill off the cells in the brain. And it can start off very slow. So slow, it's like a slow leak in a tire. But it's been on record that like up to 17 years after injury, it might take for physical symptoms to manifest. So here's why it's a difficult injury if it's not diagnosed or used the correct ways to diagnose it. It's difficult to understand why somebody is all of a sudden having psychological issues when they've never had them anymore, or balance issues when they've never had them before, or issues with memory and cognition and speech when they've never had it before. But the scientific literature and our research has shown is that it's this slow leak of inflammation over time, where little things turn into big things, and it gets to a certain point, and then pop. Now you have the manifestation of a symptom. And oftentimes in the Western model, we're not getting an understanding what is the underlying condition. We're just managing symptoms. And when you manage symptoms purely with medication, it's oftentimes needed in the acute term, but if it's not getting to the underlying condition and you're just managing symptoms, you're not improving anything, and oftentimes things are just going to get worse. But we've been able to show that process again through a lab analysis. Now, with an MRI, what's called an fMRI, which is a functional MRI, a PET scan, SPECT scan, CAT scan, these can show physical trauma to the brain, structural damage if it's there. But what it does not show, what we don't have the ability with imaging right now, is to show the process of inflammation. At least that's my understanding. And so that's why we can use another objective measurement via a lab analysis, a blood draw, and it will show these markers that will not show up on these other imaging scans. And so that's why we can say, okay, Well, we know that with, if these hormones are shut off, these are really high and these are really low, we can then say, okay, well, this is produced in this area of the brain, like the hypothalamus and the pituitary, for instance, like just to pick a generic one, like testosterone. If that is off via something called luteinizing hormone in the pituitary gland, then we can say, okay, well, then we know because the luteinizing hormone is low that there is trauma to the pituitary gland because that is where this hormone is produced. And this marker is showing that this is affected. And so it's really easy at this point. Now we can work on getting that individual's inflammation under control and correcting what their unique biochemical individuality is deficient or insufficient in. And so what our three-year study has shown that we did on 200 vets is when you can do that process, when you can identify the underlying condition and treat it naturally as possible by putting back in the body what it's no longer producing, you know, back at physiological levels, individuals get better. So much so that 91% in our study had a 50% improvement within 90 days. Wow. That's unheard of anywhere else. And again, and some of these people actually had physical structural damage to their brain, but were able to, because we would put the right things back in, put the brain and body back into what's called a neuropermissive environment, which means it can then regenerate and reheal and go through the process of neurogenesis and neuroplasticity. When it's back in that proper environment, well, the brain can rewire itself and it can work around structural damage and make new neuronal connections. And so you can even have structural damage in your brain. But if we can correct those two things, the neuroinflammation and the downregulation of the hormonal system, and the person can go out and start challenging themselves again, start learning new things again, the brain will adapt and it will regrow and regenerate and rewire around the structural damage. And this is groundbreaking stuff that we're so excited to bring.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I really want to touch on that, the correction part of it. Before we go on, I think it's very important to just let the audience know exactly some of the effects that you had, if they don't know who you are, like me sure. and Johnny do. Like, obviously, you had effects like depression, memory loss, loss of concentration, sleep issues, loss of libido, loss of muscle, pain, and then you became an alcoholic as well. So that's a huge amount to, I'm sure that, is that kind of like similar in terms of all the soldiers coming back? Like, you all have very, very similar sort of symptoms?
Yeah, there's a lot of similar symptoms, and we've actually now been able to look at meta studies that looked at like all the traumatic brain injury patients, and there's like a top 10 list, and usually like things that you just listed there are pretty universal when somebody's had head trauma. But like you said, I went from, you know, I was a high performer in situations of life and death, and I was paid to make difficult decisions in difficult situations. And I went from that to somebody who, like now through the Veterans Administration, they rated me with 33 different disabilities as a result of the injuries. And life got spun out of control. Started with energy, libido, started having balancing issues where it became difficult to walk in a straight line. I had migraine headaches, which would lead to blurry vision, to double vision on a daily basis. And then I started to become depressed. And it really threw me for a loop because I was doing everything in life that I wanted to do. I had my dream job. I had it, you know, nailed it. I was living it. Married to the woman of my dreams, We had the family of our dreams. You know, life was going to our liking. And so I couldn't for the life of me understand, like, why on earth am I overcome with depression? Like, I have no reason to be depressed, but yet here I am, and I'm depressed. It doesn't make any sense. Like, this is like when you really start to think that you might be going crazy. And then I started having, like, panic attacks in public. And, again, like, I was like, I don't have any, like, I'm cool and calm and collected with my buddies, like, gut shot and rocket-propelled grenades coming in at us and having to return fire and fire us, you know, our way out of a life-and-death situation. And now all of a sudden, like, I can't even react to traffic appropriately, or I can't even be by myself in public and keep myself from going into a crying spell and not having any understanding why I'm crying or any ability to control it or to stop it. Mm. So again, like, man, like, I thought I was going crazy, and I didn't realize these were kind of common things and common byproducts when the brain is damaged in the way that we're talking about. And so that's kind of that slow process where I went from being, you know, somebody that I was accustomed to my entire life to waking up and having no idea who the person was in front of me. And then on 13 different medications, I was told, you know, this is going to be the new you. You're not going to be able to remember things. You're not going to be able to do things the way that you've always done. Take a pen and pad where you are. You're going to be, you know, you're going to be a disabled guy, and this is your new life. And, you know, I just refused to accept that. But that very much is the problem that we're having in the military and with so many combat veterans taking their own life, which just didn't make sense to me when it first started happening, in special forces at least. And, you know, these were dudes I know, tough guys, veteran combat war fighters that thought the best decision was to take their own life, and I just didn't understand it. And I thought, because I was ignorant at the time on it, like, what a coward, how could they be so mentally weak? But it wasn't until, like, it wasn't even the amount of pain or the psychological issues I was having, it was seeing the damage that I was causing to my family, to my children, and not being in conscious control to take charge of that, and not understanding why it was really happening. And that's when I got to the point where I started to think, you know what, like, I can take anything, but if this is going to be the way that my family has to live for the remainder of my days, I think it might be better if I just cease to exist. And that's the process that so many people are dealing with when they come back from these environments. And oftentimes it's misdiagnosed as post-traumatic stress when it's really a physical brain injury that are causing the psychological manifestations that we know as post-traumatic stress. And our evidence and our work has backed that up time and time again.
Yeah, Andrew, my grandfather served in World War II, and he passed away young in his late 50s of Alzheimer's. So I was a young boy. Since then, I was like 7, late 80s when he passed away. And I watched that disease, it was degenerative brain disease, just, you know, I saw firsthand the effects that has on, you know, your loved ones. And I've always been fascinated as I got older with, all right, I'm 35 now, I'd always check articles about, you know, studies into Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ways to combat that. So, you know, I started coaching boxing, doing things ambidextrously, learning new skills. From your studies, your experience, things we've talked about, and to our listeners at home, maybe people have that Parkinson's or Alzheimer's in their family. Maybe they've been to war. Do you have any, like, simple, applicable things that they could start right now to add into their daily routine to help, you know, get that brain firing on different levels?
Yeah, I mean, one, you want when you're done learning, you're done, whether you're 17 or 170. So, I think the purpose of life is to live a life of purpose, and that's first and foremost. But then you're talking about, like, the preventative side of the house or the wellness side of the house. You know, that's a different story, and we know that we can take mitigating or do some mitigating things to control neurodegenerative disease. One would be just nutrition, right? You want to eat things that are pro-anti-inflammatory, because things that inflame the body and the brain chronically is what leads to these neurodegenerative diseases. Now, if I was I take a couple of things, but if I was still operating in special forces, or I was playing football, or I was in any type of activity or job where, you know, assaults to the head and body were on a regular basis, we can recommend a couple of things. One's called N-acetylcysteine, NAC for short, and this is a precursor to what's called glutathione, excuse me, which is produced in the liver. This is one of the best natural anti-inflammatories known to man. And you can take that, and the Army actually published a study on giving soldiers who are blown up in an active theater of war, they gave them NAC for the following 2 weeks of a blast injury, and the people that they didn't give the N-acetylcysteine to developed all the chronic manifestations that we were talking about. The ones that they gave it to did not. So the Army has published this research on this natural compound called N-acetylcysteine. So that's one. We use also in the practice mixed tocopherols. That's mixed vitamin E's. You use those together, it's going to have a synergistic effect on anti-inflammation. And you want to work on as many pathways as possible. But it's just, you know, understanding new information and then mitigating as much risk as possible and then accepting the ones that you can't mitigate. But a lot of these things we can mitigate through things that I just talked about. Nutrition's a big one, and taking these other supplements or these nutraceuticals can also help to mitigate from you ever having a problem with inflammation. For instance, like if I would have known this when I was operating, it would have kept me from ever having these problems. And so we can essentially cut it off from ever happening. And that to me is exciting. Like yeah, I wouldn't change it.
That's about purpose. My life. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's what you said earlier, living with purpose. It's that. Yeah.
Andrew, what was the significance of meeting someone like Dr. Mark Gordon? And was that the turning point for everything for you?
You know, you talked about it, Tristan, but maybe I can set the stage at my son's bedside, because I think that was the... That was like the crossroads for me, and why we're going through, you know, all of these problems, and you know, I just become chronically sick and diseased, and so much so that, you know, I was living by the hormones of stress, which had the body in a chronic fight or flight state, and that is extremely toxic when you're knocked out of homeostasis like that. So much so that I developed blood clots both in my leg and it broke off into my lungs, called bilateral pulmonary embolism. So literally, like, man, I mean, it was, you know, they didn't think there was a very low, a high mortality rate with that. But at the same time, like, my son had this congenital issue in his neck, and it's called a lymphatic malformation. But basically, like, his neck, he got sick, and his neck, this infection, it like grew the size of a softball. And he had to have 7 surgeries, and it was just, he's like 13 months at the time. It was just very, very traumatic for, you know, a 13-month-old and for the parents and anybody involved. And life was just spiraling out of control. I remember being at the hospital, at his hospital bed, just after a surgery, and he's knocked out still from anesthesia. And I just took the last pain pill that I ever took. And I washed it down with an airplane bottle of whiskey, which was just normal behavior for me. Not because I like to party and get it on like that at my son's bedside. Like, that's what I did to cope. And I didn't really know how else to cope with the things that I was coping or dealing with at the time. And there at his bedside, I remember kneeling down and touching him on his head after I just ingesting those things and saying, you know what? This is going to go one of two ways. I can continue to just take everything that the medical system's giving me, and I can continue to play a victim and keep blaming the outcome of my life on the external circumstances of my life, and it's going to kill me. And worse than that, it's going to ruin everything that I'd love. And so right there I said, I choose right here and right now, I will never, ever blame anything or any outcome of my life on anybody else but me. And you know what, if I'm going to get better, it's up to myself to get better. So right then and there I made the decision that, one, I'm going to return to the man of my pre-injury status. I'm going to find a way to get off this medication. And then I'm going to find a way to bring that same level of health and healing to other people who are having the same problem. And that led me on a new path. You know, it was like this epiphany, you know, that, hey, it's nobody else is in charge of my life but me. And no, it's not up to anybody else to fix the problems of my life because nobody else is here to live my life. And if it's going to be done, then I have to be the one to take charge and do it. Mm-hmm. And when I did that, things started to change. Things started to happen. I started to say, you know, well, what would somebody who wanted to get better do? And where would somebody look if they wanted to get better? And so I started to look at different medical treatments, and I went all over the country. And I didn't care the cost. I didn't care what people thought about it or anything else. It was just like I made that decision, and I'm not going back. And that led Dr. Gordon to actually finding me because of some media that had come out, and, you know, he was looking for different places that he could be of service. And, you know, he didn't know who I was or what I was capable of or any of these other things. He was just looking to help people who needed help. And it's because I made that decision to commit to act and to quit being a victim and to go back to being a victor that aligned me with Dr. Gordon. And because of that, today I'm off all medications. I'm performing as good, if not better, than my pre-injury status. We've helped more than 200 other individuals, but we're working right now to change the way that TBI is diagnosed, treated, and mitigated, and we're dealing with high levels of the Department of Defense and other entities that can drive real social change. And, you know, that's what it's all about. And it was that mindset of being, you know, what can I do? What can I go out and make happen? Not what can somebody do for me changed everything. And that's the reason I was able to find Dr. Gordon.
Hey, Andrew, what's been the, you know, the actual military, the army, the government, what's been their reaction to what you're doing?
You know, anytime that anything is brought new or that's unknown, it's treated, you know, with fear or, you know, as something counterculture. And, yeah. And that's been the case for anything in the scientific world or anywhere else. That's just a natural human response. But what you can't debate is the science. You can't debate the evidence. You can't debate the results. And so because we've been able to produce the evidence and the results time and time and time again, you can't start, you know, taking people who are zombified, return them back to their pre-injury self, living life again, and not think anybody's going to take notice. So because of that, we're in talks right now. We've worked with SEAL teams. We've worked with Army Special Forces. And now because we have a mountain of evidence to support what we're saying and what the scientific literature already says, they're looking to adopt Dr. Gordon's way of diagnosing, treating, and mitigating traumatic brain injury. So, you know, met with resistance at first, but how you overturn that is with evidence and sound results. And that's exactly what we've been able to produce. And so because of that, I'm confident in the next 10 years, you know, we can have a sound method to address these issues as they come up or stop them from ever becoming issues across the whole in the military arena and in the civil sector internationally, which is really, you know, what we want. We can ease the pain and suffering of this problem and make life better.
Andrew, there's so much power and strength and vulnerability. What message do you have for the people listening out there that need help, but maybe you're uncomfortable with asking for help?
Well, you just, if you need help but you're uncomfortable asking for it, I would say that you're going to have to decide. You're going to have to decide to live a life worth living. Because if it's not worth living, then it's not worth asking help or going out and finding ways to do it differently. If you've decided to live a life worth living, then go out there and make it worth living. You know, all you can do, all we can do or hope to do, we can always get better, but at any given time, all we can ever do is our best. And that encompasses going out and trying to find information, but you kind of hit it at the end and you go out and ask for help, then you just need to go out and you ask for help. Because how can you ever expect if you're not putting that level of effort into it? Because you can only ever really control two things, in my experience. And that your attitude, if those two things are under your control, you realize no matter the circumstance, no matter the situation, life can be made better or worse by your attitude and your put out of effort. I'm talking about a focused, intelligent effort driving towards a higher purpose in life is going to get you out of the process of, hey, can I just make 0.1% improvement today in my life, controlling one thing or controlling my attitude and effort and just in this one arena? If I can just commit to 0.1% every day, at the end of the year, that's 36.5%. And that's going to be compounding interest over time. And so it's a proof. A month, in a year. Probably somewhere you don't fucking be. So, like, for me, that was very beneficial in my life.
Thank you for sharing that.
Andrew, you know the psychology of being at the top of your game when you were serving, to then your brain injury and being at the lowest in your life, to then bouncing back and being back to where you were before. At what stage did you realize that you were back to where you were before, and how did that make you feel?
Yeah, 45 in.
Hey guys, gotcha.
Yeah, sorry, you broke up. Did you hear my question there?
Yeah, I got it, man. Fantastic. We're good to go. So going back, how did I knew that I was back? You know, it's been an ongoing process. I started with Mark, Dr. Gordon, in late 2014, early 2015. And, you know, I started to feel better almost immediately. But I think it's been an ongoing process because, when you're kind of in that tornado and your life goes out of control, you know, you might be able to go back to performing at a high level, but that tornado has done a lot of damage in your life, a lot of secondary damage. And so trying to go back and fix those relationships and again, take control of what you can control. But I don't get wrapped up around, like, am I where I was at or am I as good or as better? It's this, man. It's having a standard of performance or some kind of ideal self that you're working towards, and then having a process to say, am I getting closer to that or am I getting further away? So, I have an ideal self that I go over, you know, every morning. And in the evening, I give myself what's called the mirror test.
Yeah.
And I literally look myself in the mirror and I say, you know, if I were to die tonight, can I look myself in the mirror and know that I learned, I grew, I served, and I loved to the best of my abilities. Hmm. I left it all out there, and I'm ready. And some days, you know, that's the case. I can look myself in the mirror and say, man, I met that criteria across the board. Tomorrow, I'm going to replicate it, or I'm going to build upon that. A lot of days, I look myself in the mirror, and I'm like, I fell drastically short of that. But that's great, too, because that makes me come to this conclusion. I can need to make changes. I need to do something different because I didn't produce the results that I wanted to produce today, and I'm going to continue tomorrow to do my best. And that process, I think, has me, you know, if I was measuring between before injury to now, even better than that state, because I have a new perspective on life. And, you know, I was acutely aware of my own mortality before that, but now it's like life just has a more richness and complexity to it that I'm really, really just excited to be in the present moment at all times. And I think that just comes from experience and lessons learned, you know, in adversity. But that's kind of the process there, Tristan.
Yeah, Andrew, it must naturally just make you a better father as well, because when this was all happening, you've got an elder daughter that's already in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so she would have known what was happening. Has she had, like, a chat with you about, like I said, naturally, you're going to be a better father just from being back to your normal self. Have you guys spoken about it at all?
Yeah, she's been very helpful with the foundation. We brought her on as like the, you know, our photographer, and so I just found the best way in my life is to be open and to communicate, and you know, just let them know like, hey, you know, the reason these things happened was because of this physical injury, and this affected the brain in this way, and here's what happens there, and you know, I don't know to what extent she and the older ones comprehend, but there's some level of comprehension, and what they do respond to and what we all respond to is love, unconditional love, care, and compassion, and you know, that's there, and so she understands that. So I think I can't speak for her, but through her actions she's shown that, you know, whatever has happened in the past, she's been able to kind of deal with it and and put it behind her, and you know, we as a family are moving forward, and you know, that's not just, you know, my words. I can see that in their actions, which is what really matters to me.
Well, Andrew, we really appreciate you coming on. Like, what I really liked the book was the ending with all the life lessons in it as well, with the four different steps as well. But I won't spoil that too much. If the people want to see it, they'll have to buy the book. But before we let you go, I know contact details are vital, so I want to give people your website, www.waftbi.org. You're also on Instagram and Facebook under the channel Warrior Angels FDN. You've also got your podcast, Warrior Soul Podcast. Is there anything else that you'd like the people to know?
No, man, you nailed it. Just grateful for the opportunity. It's been a real honor to speak with you both, Tristan and Johnny.
No, it's been an absolute honor from our side too. Like, this is the first Special Forces Green Beret we've had on the show, right?
No, we had Tim on.
Oh, Tim Kennedy as well. But
yeah, but this is different level. This is different level, man.
Different level. Tim's a deep dude, but yeah, the insights you're sharing and the open and honesty, that's what I really appreciate, man.
Thank you, Andrew, for stopping by. Like Tristan said, man, we really appreciate all the insights and, you know, just how, you know, you gave us so much, man, so thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You guys have a great time, and we look forward to linking up in the future.
Johnny, that was Andrew Marmon.
Yeah, that was an awesome conversation. He was really, you know, upfront and open about everything that he's been through. And also, I think the big point there is like how much he wants to help people so they don't feel alone.
I think that's the biggest gift, I guess. Once you get in that mindset of helping someone else, that passion can really come through, and that personal experience that he's faced. And
it can really go the other way, though, right?
Possibly. But it's always great to start when you've got that passion, that fire, and at the same time, you're a giver instead of a taker. That's a great quality.
I mean, like, think about the issue in America with veterans, and the issue in America when you relate the statistics of veterans and homelessness.
Yeah.
And then veterans, homelessness, and mental disease. And it could go the either way. I really believe that there's these moments, these very pivotal moments in life, guys, whether we have, you know, you're conscious of them or not, of a simple decision could take your whole life's trajectory one way or another.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with government's reluctance to change. So that's the biggest issue. Like Andrew's story, and this is probably why more and more people need to share things like Andrew's story, is that unfortunately in today's day and age, governments just are so slow to move on things like this.
Yeah, the system's not built for the individual. The system's built for the system.
Yeah, they don't want to change.
There's no value.
There's no value in them changing, because it just makes the process hard for them.
Yeah, and that's why, like, platforms like podcasting with, you know, free-range speech where you can have chats like this and, you know, having platforms. And, you know, Andrew is doing his best with going – I mean, you first heard of him from the – was he on
– He's on Joe Rogan.
Was on Rogan.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, everybody knows. You get on Joe Rogan, that's like the Rogan bump.
Absolutely.
You know, the ratings, and you get that message across. So shout-out to Rogan too, man, for you know – putting guys like that on his platform and then allowing, you know, up-and-comers like ourselves and get them on our platform and just tell the story that needs to be told, especially when it comes to overall livelihood and mental health and all that good stuff.
Yeah, business is not like listening to the story. It's about promoting what he's doing. So if you're a listener out there and you agree with what Andrew's doing, like support him, tweet to him or something like that.
Because that's a good guy to follow.
That's how the motion gets started, because if you listen to it and support him but then stay silent, the message gets sent nowhere. But to get a move, because this needs to be moved, the quicker it does, because it's just going to help so many people. You know firsthand, having lived in America for so long, the actual issues with veterans coming back and the different lives they have between before they leave and when they come back. So
yeah, my brother-in-law, like I mentioned with the chat with Andrew, is a lieutenant in the Air Force, and I've had friends directly affected. My best friend's a JAG Marine in the Air Force or in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And but on the other side, like, there's so many countless stories of just lives just torn. Like, there's nothing that good comes. War is business, guys. Let's not get it twisted. War is a billion-dollar business. And when the after-lying effects, the consequences are the things that the general, like we, you know, the normal people have to deal with. You know, it's kind of like the systems that we talk about aren't in place for that.
What I'm like really just always amazed at, so an NFL player gets paid $20 million to put his life on the line, like his body on the line, but these guys go to war, put their lives on the line, and come back with all these traumatic symptoms, and they get paid not that much.
How about teachers? The veteran world is just so crazy. You got the soldier who is literally now. Without getting too political, guys, we're not a political podcast. We're not standing to try to be analysts or trying to change the world from a political viewpoint.
No.
But from a soldier's perspective mentally, they are not looking at it as the general pop. Oh, they're not really fighting for free. Dude, the soldier is wired to defend you and defend your rights and defend your freedom. And that's why they do what they do. That's how they're wired. That is their purpose. But like you said, they're not getting paid $20 million to do it. It's a selfless act of courage and a selfless act of bravery. And you got the kid, though, who's just naturally gifted, who works a little bit hard, who's a millionaire. And then you get the teacher who went to school and she teaches for 30 years. She makes 30 grand a year.
Yeah,
she can't even afford to own a home. And it's just the social constructs that are just so twisted. And we need more people like Andrew Marr to highlight the real stories and the real heroes and the real research going on to help push people in the right way, in the right direction forward, to help, you know, promote overall awareness and well-being.
Yeah, for sure. So, guys, support his cause. Tweet to him. You know, send him messages on Facebook. Check out his website. It's all going to be in the show notes. I'll try and find the
Angels.
Yeah, it's Angels. Just give me 1 second. I'll bring it all up.
Yeah, it's a Facebook page, foundation.
We'll have it all in the show notes. But I just want to maybe just give a shout out now for the people that continue to listen and maybe didn't hear it before.
Yeah, it's actually not an easy one to find on Facebook.
No, I've got the page. I've just kind of shut my little book, unfortunately.
Angels Warriors. Isn't it Angel Warrior Foundation?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. So, guys, go to his Facebook. You'll find it there. And he's very open and he's very interactive on there. So it's a good cause, and we appreciate you guys listening to this.
Yeah, definitely. Just check it out. Maybe the best way to do it is www.thevisionboardpodcast.com/Marr, M-A-R-R, and we'll have all the details for his contact. So get in touch with him. I'm sure that he would love to hear from you.
Excellent, man.
All right, Johnny, before we go, social media.
Guys, follow me, Johnny Stofko, all social medias. I appreciate you.
There you go. I'm Tristan Cannell across all my channels. Please support any messages you want to send us, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com. Either myself or Johnny answering the questions. So send them through.
Rock and roll, guys.
All right, guys. Next week, we've got Dr. Corey Peacock making a return, which should be fun. And then Dr. Chris Masterjohn will be making his first appearance.
Bringing back-to-back PhDs, one in sports performance, one in nutrition. We're bringing value, guys, and we get to learn. You guys get to learn. We appreciate you.
Yeah, so going to have some great guests to end the year. Paul Rabel, lacrosse player, he's going to be coming on, doing some great shows as well.
And then the one we've been working on for 2 years.
Yeah, early next year, Layla Ali is going to be coming on. So that's going to be pretty cool.
Super excited. Yeah. Muhammad Ali's daughter.
All right, Johnny.
Tristan Cannell.
You have a great week.
Peace.
And I'll see you next week.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.